I would like to begin by sharing with you a passage written by someone that was a faithful member of a church, a layperson. The article that he wrote is called From the Back Pew. When a Sunday falls between Christmas and New Year's, in our congregation at least, we are not overrun by stampeding throngs of worshipers trying to find the last inch of standing room. In fact, it is one of those low Sundays when the regular minister takes the week off and one of the lay people in the congregation, of which I am one, is invited to take the service. And people stay away in droves. But the ones who come tend to be the Annas and the Simeons, the aging folk who, at a very deep and profound level, understand the meaning of their faith. The folks who are there, at least in my congregation, are the old faithfuls, and most of them are women, Annas. Most of the women in our various women's groups are in this category, and they have a strong and powerful ministry in the church. There is reason to believe that the whole thing would fall apart if they were not there. And they are always complaining about not having younger members. But I wonder, why do they not more often celebrate their ministry, see themselves as part of an ancient order that has kept God's church going for several thousand years? As I read that old story in Luke, I wonder if Mary and Joseph would have really believed what they knew about that child if the wise old sidewinder and the old sage had not brought it to their attention. Anna and Simeon, evangelist and prophet, may have been the foundation on which the Christian church was built and on which it continues to survive. Isn't that great? Anna and Simeon. The old sage and the old crone have eyes that are able to see salvation. Eyes that are accustomed to looking for and seeing God's presence in the world around them. Eyes that have stared long and hard at ancient scripture. Eyes that have spent hours upon hours upon hours in prayer. Anna and Simeon had prepared themselves over a lifetime through discipline and devotion, and now at last they were graced with a glimpse of the divine. It is interesting to notice how often in this passage it says that Mary and Joseph fulfilled the law of God. The gospel writer goes to some length to make sure that we understand that Mary and Joseph were devout Jews who followed all the customs and the rituals of their religion. I believe that the writer was trying to tell us that rituals and customs are important. One of the foundational principles of the Jewish faith is that God is to be honored in one's rising up and in one's lying down, in going out and in coming in the way we dress and in the way we eat. In other words, all of life was lived in devotion to God and in awareness of God's presence. There was to be no separation between what we call secular and sacred. No separation. There were rituals that accompanied almost all of life's occurrences. In our lesson for today, we read about the rituals that accompanied the birth of a child. If the child was male, he was to be circumcised on the eighth day of life as a way of welcoming him into the community and marking him as one of their own. As a firstborn son, he was to be consecrated to God, taken to the temple, and dedicated to the service of God, and then brought back or redeemed by his parents for a certain fee. The mother was also to make a sacrifice at the temple in order to be purified after giving birth. Now, while some of these rituals may seem rather strange and antiquated to us, they did serve an important function. We note rather a common event, like having the birth of a child, was surrounded by ritual and worship. It was not a private, individual occurrence, as it often is today. Rather, it was a sacred event. God's presence was acknowledged and honored in numerous ways. And in fulfilling all of the requirements of the Jewish law, the parents were reminded once again who they were in relationship with God. They were reminded that they are God's children all day, every day, and in everything that they did. Rituals and disciplines have fallen on hard times in American Protestant world. Traditional rituals are often seen as empty, mechanical practices performed by rote and without meaning or feeling, and so they can be sometimes. That is the danger of rituals. But in losing them altogether, we risk losing something vitally important, our awareness of the divine in our everyday lives. Today, few families set aside time to read and reflect on the Bible or other sacred literature together. Few people, I'm afraid, set aside time to pray or meditate on a daily basis. Even praying before we eat, saying a blessing before a meal, has become much less common. Even church attendance for 1 hour a week is no longer considered mandatory in America. And then we wonder why we struggle so and why we complain that salvation is not given to us. Perhaps we have not prepared our eyes to see the salvation that is right before us. We are not used to seeing God's presence in every aspect of our lives. I often hear people say things like, "Well, I don't need to come to church. I can worship at home or in the forest." And I think, you know, that's true. We can worship at home and we can worship in the forest. The question is, do we? Do we? Do we set aside time at home to worship God? Do we intentionally go to the forest and set aside time to commune with our Creator? What rituals and practices are we observing that help us to grow spiritually, help us to know God more deeply, help prepare us to see God's salvation? In our story that we read, many people had seen Jesus, the baby Jesus, but it was Simeon and Anna who could recognize what they were seeing. How many of you, this is going back a number of years, but how many of you years ago saw that movie, What's Love Got to Do with It? Anyone remember that? Yeah. It was about the life of Tina Turner. She was a famous rock singer. Started out as Ike and Tina Turner. They were married. And then she moved on and made a lot of records and a career on her own. Apparently, according to this movie, and I think it is biographically correct, she was an abused wife. Ike used to beat her periodically. But somehow she couldn't leave him. She was caught in an unhealthy psychological mindset that prevented her from abandoning her abuser. She had been abandoned as a child, and she swore she would never abandon her husband. And so she was trying to heal him what needed to be healed in herself. She was trying to give him all the love that she so desperately needed. And so she stayed trapped in a marriage that was not good for either one of them. And her friends would become indignant, and they would tell her that she shouldn't take it from him. She should just walk out. She should leave. But she couldn't. And then one of her very wise friends taught her how to meditate. She introduced her to a spiritual discipline. In her case, it was Buddhist meditation of chanting. And Tina learned to chant every day. And over time, she learned how to quiet herself. And she learned how to contact that deepest part of herself, that place where wisdom and strength and serenity lives. I have said many times that the path to God is a path inward. It is in the deepest part of our souls that we meet and contact God. Over time, with daily rituals and chanting, Tina became very strong and very calm. She came to see her own worth and her own value. She came to realize that submitting to abuse was not helping her and it was not helping him. She learned to grow beyond her unhealthy relationship, and she challenged Ike to do the same. Through her spiritual disciplines and rituals, she was at last able to see the truth. She was able to access the wisdom and the courage and the strength that had always been within her. And a very powerful transformation took place in her life and within her soul. She found a kind of salvation. God is present within us and around us all the time. We simply have to open our eyes and see that fact. But most of us in our lifetime have to train our eyes to perceive the divine. We have to learn to listen to that voice within. It doesn't necessarily come naturally or automatically. We have to learn to notice the everyday miracles. We have to remind ourselves frequently that we belong to God in our rising up and in our lying down, in our going out and in our coming in. We have to learn the spiritual truths like we learned the alphabet when we were children. And then someday, like Anna, like Simeon, we may be able to say, "Lord, dismiss your servant in peace, for my eyes have seen your salvation." May it be so.